It's all consciousness.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anything behind the consciousness?
No, it's all there is. And so what could be behind all there is? If there was something behind it, it wouldn't be all there is. And so what's behind it is, what is it? It's all there is.
Just who do you think you are?
Hey, Bobo! Quiet.
Do you like it strong?
Yeah, strong is good.
Welcome to the Urban Guru Cafe.
When your day is long and the night is yours alone, when you're sure you've had enough of this life, well, hang on. Don't let yourself go. Cause everybody cries, everybody hurts sometimes.
Our guest this week is Rick Lynchitz. Welcome to the Urban Guru Cafe, Rick.
Thank you, Stuart.
Let's cut straight to the chase. The question I'd like to put to you is a question of helping others.
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. And, you know, at the very deepest level, there are no others. And there is no one. There's no one to help. And there's no one doing the helping. And yet, as it appears, as the world appears to unfold, as the world of appearance, the world we see, it seems that there are individuals and that these individuals are helping others. And there's a concept, a very precious concept, that there's such a thing as an individual with free will, and that he can choose to help others or choose not to help others. What's become clear, and I can have no idea why it seems clear, but there is some clarity about this concept, that beneath this concept there's a knowing that there's no others and there's no one to give help, and yet the appearance is as such. So I have no interest in changing that. There's no one to really stop trying to help, and I have no idea why in certain situations there appears to be someone who goes to somebody's aid and other times there isn't that appearance. It sounds very confusing even as I'm talking about it.
Where do we go? Nobody knows. Don't ever say you're on your way down. When God gave you style and gave you grace and put a smile upon your face.
You know, sometimes what is being pointed at is called that.
Well, you know, as soon as you try to point at it, you know, you're sort of going away from it in some way. You know, I've begun speaking about it, and sometimes, and I call it different things all the time because, you know, what the hell's the difference what you call it? But I sometimes speak of it as all there is. And as all there is really, obviously, just when you say all there is, there's nothing that's not that. So everything, every thought, every feeling, every emotion, every sensation, everything is that. Every appearance is that. And even the appearance of a group of individuals showing up in, you know, what's called a meeting or a satsang is also that. And there's this appearance of someone who is there to help. The appearance includes these apparent individuals who feel that they need help, and in that appearance, there appears to be someone who's going to offer help. For others, it seems to be just being there and just talking and enjoying the appearance of this meeting.
In the appearance of space and time, there appeared that there was a time when you needed help. And we may say that the burden of believing in being a person is gone. But that's just another story, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You know, every time there's a discussion of what we call the past, it's clearly a story because, as we talked about, since we're talking about all there is, that every concept of time and space is obviously, it's all inclusive. So there's only the eternal present. And in this eternal present, there's an appearance of thoughts, feelings, emotions that seem to refer to a so-called past. But what is that past other than something appearing in this present that we refer to as past? So this whole story about this awakening or this change or this shift, and my dear friend Nadine, you know, who was, you know, you referred to earlier when we spoke, who appeared to be the transmitter of this shift, it's all the story that's appearing in this eternal now.
So what is time?
Time is just a story. It's an appearance. It's a series of thoughts, feelings, emotions that seem to refer to a life that occurred in a so-called different time, a time we call past. And that obviously has no reality or relevance other than as an appearance in the eternal now. There's only the eternal now, which is all that. And of course, all of these thoughts and feelings, they're all that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with thinking of a so-called past or believing in a so-called past, because that's also what is in the eternal now. So there's only an apparent difference between the future and the past, but they're both equally illusory.
They're both unknown.
Yeah, they're both completely unknown. And they actually both have no relevance other than an apparent difference in the type of thought in the eternal now. They're both thoughts in the eternal now. One seems to refer to a so-called future that hasn't occurred, and another one seems to refer to a so-called past that, quotes, has occurred. But in reality, it's all the eternal now.
And right here and right now, you're listening to the Urban Guru Cafe and Bob Dylan.
Oh, the ragman draws circles up and down the block. I'd ask him what the matter was, but I know that he don't talk. And here I sit so patiently, waiting to find out what price you have to pay to get out of going through all these things twice.
In this apparent time, you are a doctor.
Right.
And you deal with what we will term as the human condition. What can you say about this human condition?
Well, you know, as we spoke about, this, you know, this, there's really no agenda here. And I have no investment in people hearing this message or understanding this or buying into it.
Yep.
The great majority of this world, apparent world that we deal with, has absolutely no interest in what we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
And probably would just consider all this crazy talk. And so what? So, you know, there are very few apparent individuals who walk into my office who need to hear this or are dying to hear this message. And if the issues come up, there's no hesitancy to speak about them. But there's also no agenda in actually putting forth these ideas. So the human condition is as it's experienced. You know, it's just life going on. And in that whole description, it includes this apparent doctor who, you know, we call Rick, who is also apparently participating in this human condition. And in that participation, there's no discussion of anything beyond that apparent interaction between doctor and patient necessarily.
Yeah.
There's no one controlling that. You know, there's no Rick who's making decisions, and there's no patient who needs to be affected by those decisions. And yet there's a clear-cut appearance that there is something like that going on, and there's no need to interfere with that or explain that away or to minimize that.
This body is an appearance. It's also a living, organic thing. How do you see your own body?
Well, you know, that's the unsurpassed beauty of this and mystery of this whole thing, because it is so incredible that this complex world seems to arise out of absolutely nothing. This apparently complex world with all the apparent individuals and all these feelings and thoughts and ideas about the past and the creation of this entire history of a so-called individual, all of this arises out of nothing. So when we talk about the so-called my body, there's a recognition that it's the same complexity arising out of nothing. There is no such thing as my body. There is this appearance of a body, and there are thoughts, sensations, feelings. I mean, currently I'm dealing with some neck pain. I seem to have had a herniated disc secondary to an automobile accident. I was hit from behind about 3 weeks ago while I was driving, being taken home from the airport. And so I have this pain, and I talk about it with you clearly as I have this pain. And yet there's a recognition as we're speaking that no one has this pain. There's this pain that's being experienced, and it's experienced by no one.
So there's nothing wrong.
That is really the beauty of this, is that, you know, there's this idea that pure awareness is, you know, is the pausing of thought, and that when the thoughts come in, you know, that all of that goes away. But actually, you know, depending on definitions, but if you're talking about pure awareness as all there is, or that, truthfully, it's also that appearing as thoughts, that appearing as confusion, that appearing as pausing of thoughts, that appearing as bliss, that appearing as misery. It's all of it is that. And I know when these talks occur, when these meetings occur, or when I'm in an apparent interview situation like this, after a while, it becomes clear that there's really nothing to talk about. You know? Because that, which we're talking about now, can only be talked about so much when all the questions lead back to the same thing, that even the questions are arising out of nothing.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about the weather, we can talk about life, we can talk about my story, all of which is absolutely fine. Again, there's absolutely no agenda, because everything is that. Everything, absolutely everything. And it just appears to be talking about stories, it appears to be talking about nothingness. It's all the same.
So do you have people getting angry with what you're saying?
Oh yeah, very much so. That's really interesting too. There is this sort of idea somehow that there is this individual who's trying to challenge a belief, or and beliefs can be apparently a very precious aspect of this appearance. And beliefs need to be defended. And if somebody is actually just talking about something and not even having any agenda that anybody should agree or disagree, it still can be experienced apparently as a big challenge. And then there appears to be this individual who must defend their individuality and defend their beliefs. So yeah, this is a very subversive message to that. You know, and you know, I guess the reaction is, what do you mean? There's no such thing as personal responsibility. And I've seen that reaction occur, not necessarily to the words that I appear to say, but I've seen other speakers be attacked in that way. In fact, the first contact I had with Nadine, who's, as I mentioned, is a friend, he was giving a talk at a satsang at a hotel that he owned. And one of the participants reacted in just that way. What do you mean? There's no responsibility? And he was angry and screaming, and he stormed out. And the reality is that personal responsibility still plays out in this world of appearance. If you do something in the appearance, you're going to get punished for it, or you're going to escape punishment. But there's, you know, that's the world. That's the way the world works. It has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Everybody loves to put things in context. Maybe you could talk a little bit about Nadine.
Well, Nadine is a friend. You know, I guess people do love stories, and I'm just as happy to talk about stories as anybody else. So, you know, in this story, I was working as a physician and thought I was a very healthy guy. I was very athletic and always stayed in good shape, and apparently developed this cancer, which came out of the blue. And it was a big shock. It was a lung cancer. I never was a smoker, so it was even more shocking that it would manifest itself in that way. And, you know, I went into tremendous despair, and somehow I got the idea that the only way to save my life would be to become enlightened and have my cells become enlightened. Some kind of interesting fantasy about the way the body works. Even being a physician, somehow it didn't matter. I was definitely believing that something like that was necessary. So I went on this intense seeking binge, so to speak. I mean, I had been a seeker for years before that, and I was kind of interested in Eastern philosophy, but this, you know, all of a sudden this interest became a burning one and a very apparently personal one. And in this seeking binge quest, somehow I showed up down in this at this yoga resort down in Costa Rica, and it was owned by this fellow, Nadine. And he, you know, I had never met him before, heard of him before. In all my seeking, I had never seen any of his books, and was pretty big on the satsang circuit in Europe at the time. And he started speaking one evening at that resort. And I wasn't down there as a spiritual retreat. I was down there as a sort of a couples retreat, you know, because my wife was really freaked out about how I was going into myself and apparently withdrawing from her. So she'd sort of dragged me down there. And he just gave this talk one evening, and I was listening to the talk, and he said, consciousness is all there is, and you are that. And I must have heard that hundreds of times and read about it, and it just never really, I mean, intellectually maybe I didn't sound that interesting, but something happened that evening, apparently happened that evening, and there was this sense of, I guess, complete relaxation or surrender. You know, if consciousness is all there is, I mean, I can try to make a story about it now, how that happened.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Consciousness is all there is, and I'm that. Who the hell is this guy who's trying to save his life and trying to become enlightened and trying to protect his family from being without a husband and father? Who is this guy? Yeah. I mean, if it's all there is, there's nobody separate from consciousness. So there was this kind of falling into the whole, you know, this individual just sort of disappeared. And the recognition that not only did this, what was not really that an individual disappeared, it was a real recognition that there never was an individual who was fighting this fight. Yeah. It was just consciousness unfolding as an apparent individual fighting with consciousness. Mm-hmm. And all the resistance just completely melted because there's no longer anyone to be resistant. You know, it was interesting because, you know, in memory, again, memory, as we talked about earlier, that interesting idea that there was a person and there was a past. Well, in memory, there was this feeling that nothing really profound was happening or earth-shattering. Other memories of a Rick character in Zen retreats having these mind-blowing experience of joy and ecstasy. And this was just more of a quiet kind of relaxation. It was nothing really earth-shattering or mind-blowing.
It's ordinary. And people are desperate to find it.
They're desperate for it, and they don't want to hear it in this form. This form is very frightening to the precious belief that there is an individual and a life, and someone has to live that life, and there's work to do. And that's really, you know, that actually shakes the whole thing to the core. And yet all of life in appearance, is this seeking and searching for just what we're talking about. Yeah. Can't be so simple.
So you've been talking about this for a few years now.
Yeah, I guess it's the shift, probably, if you want to call it that, in this apparent history happened about 10 years ago. And during that period of time, there was really no talking at all. In fact, I think for a couple of years after that, I had been ill with, as I said, with this cancer, and I had stopped working for a while. There's really nothing doing. I spent a lot of hours and a lot of days, a lot of months, and probably a year and a half just sitting in a chair doing pretty much nothing. And after that, Nadine started asking me if I wanted to speak with him. Yeah, so I started, you know, giving talks with Nadine, and then kept on coming back that year after year. And like I said, people sometimes will ask me to speak now locally. And it only seems to happen if somebody asks for it. There doesn't seem to be any need or desire to seek out giving talks for some reason or other.
Yeah. There's nothing to sell.
Well, there is nothing to sell. But, you know, the interesting part is, you know, when somebody asks, it's pure joy to do it. You know, it's fun to speak about this. And, you know, that's part of the mystery, too. What's the fun in talking about nothing? And, yet there's a real charge in it, a complete joy about it.
One of the big issues for a great number of aspirants is the question of methods and practices. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Methods and practices, you know, are somewhat analogous to what we were talking about earlier, is my apparently being a physician. You know, is there anyone attached to being a physician? No, it's just that that's what appears. And the methods and practices appears in the same completely natural way for some and not for others. And really, there are no some and no others. And in some of these appearances, there appears to be someone attached to the practices. And in others, there appear to be practices appearing with no attachment at all. And all of it is fine. All of it's completely natural. So there's no recommendation. You know, one of the things that seems to come up often in these meetings is the fact that nothing that I say is prescriptive. It's all descriptive. So there's no recommendations for anything. There's no recommendations for practices or methods. Yeah. And yet there's no recommendations not to do any of those. So, hang on one second. Let me just get my dog to shut up. Hey, Bobo! Quiet.
Hello, you. Hello, me. Hello, people. We used to be. Isn't it strange? We never changed. We've been through it all, yet we're still the same. And I know it's a miracle we still go. For all we know, we might still have a way to go.
Well, Rick, it's been a delight talking to you, and maybe we can do it again.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do it.
Yeah.
Really nice talking to you, Gilbert.
The Urban Guru Cafe is produced in Australia.
Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion.